podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, May 17th, 2020. This is episode 1696. Enjoy. The Tech Guy comes to you from TWiT's LastPass Studios. Stay in control when it comes to your company's access points and authentication. LastPass makes enterprise-level security simple for your remote workforce. Check out LastPass.com/TWiT to learn more. This episode of The Tech Guy is brought to you by LastPass. Prepare for the unexpected in your business with LastPass, trusted by over 17 million users and 61,000 businesses worldwide. Visit LastPass.com/TWiT to find out how they can help you. And by LinkedIn Learning. A lot of things are changing in our professional lives. With over 16,000 courses taught by industry experts, LinkedIn Learning is where you can get the skills that can help you and your career. Keep learning to rise to any moment. And try 1 month free at linkedinlearning.com/tech guy. And by Manscaped, the best in men's below-the-belt grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Get 20% off plus free shipping at manscaped.com, code TECHGUY. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Yes, time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, Internet of Things devices, 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number, 888 827-5536, toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada, 8888-ASK-LEO. There is a website if you hear something and you want to know more, or, you know, you say, oh, I need to make a note of that. That's you don't have to write anything down. We got it control, under control for you. All yez has to do is go to techguylabs.com, and it's all there. And it's free. There's no sign up. I'm not going to get your email address. I'm not going to spam you with newsletters. Nope. Too much trouble. Too much work. I'm lazy. I do the show. That's it. That's all there is. And then we put it on the website. If you want to, you know, it's like a newsletter. If you want to find out more, you just go to the website. You can even leave comments there, which is nice. So if you have, you know, you hear something and you're yelling at the radio saying, Leo, no, there's a better way, then just go to the website and add your comment to that. I appreciate that. TechGuyLabs.com. 8888-ASK-LEO. I've been using something that I really like, and I thought I'd tell you about it after trying it for some time. And it comes up because Congress just passed the reauthorization of the Patriot Act, as they do every few years since 9/11. And one of the things that they really tried to add, they lost by one vote. The senators lost by one vote. They really tried to add an amendment that said you can't just go ask for people's internet history. You can't do it. You need a warrant. Right now, I actually wasn't really aware of this until I, you know, saw this whole story. Right now, without a warrant, I presume it has to be, you know, somebody with a badge, I would hope. But without a warrant, you can go to your internet service provider and say, what's Leo been looking at? Where has he been going? What kind of sites does he go to? You can do that for anybody, anytime, without a warrant. That's kind of, I don't know. That kind of bugs me a little bit. Does it bug you? So it bugs enough people that there's a new thing going on called DNS over HTTPS, which is a lot of letters. DOH sometimes we call it, but that's even more confusing. The idea is it scrambles your internet lookups. So your internet service provider can't see the sites they're looking for. They can still see where you're going, I think. Right? Because you're going to get the traffic from that site. They might still be able to collect that information. And apparently they just hand it over anytime anybody asks. Oh, yeah, sure. But then I've been using a new thing, and I think I like this, and I think I'm going to tell you about it. And it's just something you might want to try, and this is kind of a black diamond tip, more advanced geeky tip. It's called NextDNS. It's a free, well, it's mostly free service. It's free for a certain number of uses, I think 300,000 in a month, 10,000 a day. No, 1,000 a day. 10,000 a day. 10,000 a day. That's a lot. But if you put it on all your devices, you probably, I hit that limit. I got, last month, 2.5 million queries went through it. So I'm paying, but it's not much. It's $20 a year, and it's worth it. But you can also use it for free, and it's, I would try it for free. NextDNS.io. It blocks ads, trackers, malicious websites. It protects, and this is, which is nice, this is where I like it. It protects your privacy from your internet service provider. It's not a VPN. You can use it with a VPN if you want. It doesn't hide your, doesn't scramble your traffic, but it scrambles your searches. You can also shield kids from adult content, gambling, piracy sites. I think this is a really interesting idea. In order to use it, you either install something on your, works on your phone, iOS and Android, or on your Mac or your Windows device, and you can install an app that will turn it on. Or, and this is the more advanced thing you can do, and they explain how to do this. You can go in your router settings and change your DNS so it doesn't go through your internet service provider anymore. Your domain lookups go through NextDNS. They don't log. They don't keep track of it. So even if the authorities came to them, they'd say, well, I don't know what Leo's been doing because we don't keep track of that. I think I'm going to keep using this. NextDNS.io. And you control it. You can turn stuff off and on. You don't have to have the filtering if you don't want to. You don't have to have ad filtering if you don't want to. The most important thing to me is the privacy protection. So now that I know what's going on, now that I know they're watching, now I'm thinking, maybe I'll start using this. Actually, I've been using it for a couple of months and I like it. NextDNS.io. NextDNS.io. Rumor. You like rumors? We got nothing much else going on. Yesterday, I talked a little bit about the latest iPhone, the iPhone SE, which came out a few weeks ago, which I've been using, and I really like it. For $400, it's definitely the iPhone to get, unless you need that better camera. You don't really. But here's another rumor, an Apple rumor, and it's a battle between the two rumor mongers, Ming-Chi Kuo, who writes about Apple from China, from the supply chain. So he has a lot of information based on what Apple's making. And then a guy, John Prosser, who used to be a YouTuber, and he's just recently emerged as the guy. He nailed the iPhone SE. He's very good. I don't know how he does it. He's a tech analyst. And I think what it is he's got somebody on the inside at Apple. But he's in a little fight with Ming-Chi Kuo. Because Ming-Chi Kuo said that Apple will launch, and this is the thing I'm kind of interested in, augmented reality glasses in 2022 at the earliest. 2022, 2 years from now. John Prosser says, I can't believe, this is his tweet, I'm going against Kuo on this one. This was on Friday. But I believe he's wrong. Apple glasses are aimed for March through June of 2021. What? A year from now? What? A year from now. Also, I've seen them. They're slick as HE double hockey sticks. We'll be showing you soon. Mr. Prosser, my goodness. I like this idea. It's pretty clear if you look at what Apple's hiring has been and where they're kind of pushing the envelope, like with the augmented reality on the phones and stuff. It's pretty clear they're interested in this. Even Tim Cook, their CEO, has said a couple of times, oh, we're really excited about augmented reality. Well, I should explain what that is. You probably know VR. That's where you put the helmet on and you play the game and it's like you're in that world and people laugh at you and mock you because you're dancing around because you think you're using a lightsaber and really you're just dancing around. But it's fun. That's virtual reality, VR. AR, Microsoft has something called HoloLens. It does this. You're wearing glasses that you can see the world. You see the world, but it's like a heads-up display on the glasses in your vision. You see stuff superimposed on the world. So the classic science fiction is, you know, you walk up to somebody and there's a little bubble over their head that says, that's John. You went to school with him. He's got two children, Sally and Louie, and his wife is Mary, and he owes you $12, you know, popping up over his head. And you can say, hey, John, where's that $12 you owe me? And how are Louie and Sally? You know, you can sound like you know what you're... That would be the augmented reality, the idea. And it's more than that. You know, you're walking down a street, you're saying, where's that store? And it goes, beep, beep, over there, highlights it. It's a cool idea. And actually, it's, to me, much more interesting idea than virtual reality. Because virtual reality, you know, you kind of make you a little queasy. Have you had that, little car sick? For a lot of people. Significant percentage of the population. Plus, you're wearing this sweaty thing on your face, and you look like a dope. And I don't know. My kids love it. Oh man, they love playing the VR games. They love that. Beat Saber. Have you played that? It's like a game, music, and you're lightsabering, and you look like a dork, but they don't care because they're all, you know, they're taking turns. They all look like dorks. I think that's less interesting to the rest of the world, if you're to the non-gamer. You know, VR nowadays, you can visit people, you can visit Italy safely and stuff like that. So maybe there's going to be a big resurgence of virtual reality. But I think augmented reality, especially if they just look like glasses. And if Apple's going to do them, they're probably just going to look like you're wearing your regular glasses, except you're seeing more. And you can talk to Siri. You can see the weather forecast all while you're walking down the street. What do you think? And next year? So I just thought I'd pass that rumor. I like that rumor. Something to look forward to. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. If you want to talk iTech, that's what I'm here for. Spreading good cheer. And that's it. That's all I'm spreading today. Good cheer. Unbreakable. Except your tires aren't unbreakable. Isn't that awful? Kim Schaffer, ladies and gentlemen, our phone angel. She's unbreakable, except she pulled up at work today with a flat.
Yeah, well, at least it happened, and I'm held captive here for 3 hours anyway. It wasn't...
That's true. Could have been worse. You could have got a flat down the road.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll just call AAA and, you know, have them hopefully change it while we're here.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sorry. Well, I'll keep my... Okay. I have a window. I'll keep my appeal for the tow truck.
Yeah, you can let me know when they get here. I haven't called them yet, but I'll
call them. He'll probably just honk really loudly.
Yeah, I'm in the studio with no windows. So.
Yeah, but I'm not. Anyway. I'll hear him. We'll all hear him.
There's only three cars in the lot, so it's not hard to figure out which one
it's pretty empty, isn't it? Happy Sunday.
Happy Sunday.
Who should I... I see the phones, so I don't have to reboot it today. Like I did yesterday.
It's been a weekend. How about Jim in Pleasanton?
Jim in Pleasanton. Thank you, Kim. Hello, Jim.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I got something here. I wanted to find out what time it is.
The time is now 2 a.m.
In Bakava, Belgian Congo. That is...
Jungle Telegraph. We'd like to say hello to Oonga Boonga and all the boys.
That is a blast from the past.
That's something I saved to my computer back when DOS was only three letters.
Exactly. Yeah. When I first started doing this show in the early 90s with John C. Dvorak, John was a little ADD. He'd get bored. So I gave him some sound effects. We started collecting them.
Yeah.
And ended up being his favorite, I think. That was our signature sound effect.
Mine too.
For the long time, we couldn't figure out where it came from. It was from an old Dennis the Menace episode. Dennis finds a shortwave radio, and that was what he heard on his shortwave radio.
Well, I didn't know where it came from either, but I used to manage a bunch of Sun workstations and servers, and I learned how to transmit audio to these servers. And these guys would be sitting there doing nothing. I'd play that for them.
Oh, you are funny. Oh, man, it has a life of its own. Well, it's so nice to talk to you. That means you've been listening to me prattle on for...
Well, back when dirt was new.
Yeah, practically 30 years. Holy moly. Right. Well, it was different, wasn't it, in those days? It was Windows 3.1.1, Windows for work groups. It was DOS.
Yeah, I know it. And we had things like floppy disks.
Floppies. What we didn't have? We really didn't have the internet.
We didn't.
That changed everything.
It was, you know, where I worked, we had a lot of servers and sons, but, yeah. You know, nowhere to go, you know, and yeah, it was a lot of fun. Anyway, I'm having trouble. I want to keep you here, but my Gmail, I manage a bunch of people, retirees from where I used to work, and nice. around 400 people now and then.
Nice.
And I've been getting messages from, I use Gmail, which is fine usually.
Yeah.
But now I'm getting messages that says there was a problem in delivering your message, and this, the notice was the recipient server did not accept our request to connect.
Now, I have a question for you on that.
Yes.
So there's two possibilities. Was it an actual email that you sent or your clients sent?
No, it's one I sent.
But it is one. You can see the email that you tried to send.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Because one time, that happens to a lot of people, and you may have seen this also, because spammers are notorious for using your email address. They're never going to use their email address in the return.
Sure.
So when they send out a million emails and your address is the return address, you'll get a certain number of bounce backs.
Yeah.
That's just internet background noise. But if it's an actual email that you tried sending, have you actually sat down and tried resending that email and watch it and see it come bouncing back?
Yes.
And you're sure?
It'll do that over a period of days because it will tell me
it keeps
that
trying.
It'll
try it'll keep trying. And yeah. And you're sure you have a proper email address, right? It's an existing email address. Is it one particular host you're sending to?
Well, I'm sending to, there's four of them that give me trouble. One of them is Earthlink, the other one's Mindspring, the other one's Netcom, and then there's another one, PeoplePC or something. But
it's no accident that all of those are really old ISPs.
They are, that's right.
There seems to be a commonality in all of that.
Exactly, and we're retirees here.
Yeah, of course, all of your email addresses. Gmail is, of course, run by Google and is run very well by Google. Gmail adheres to all the modern standards.
Yes.
So, I don't know why Mindspring. Wow, there's a blast from the past. Earthlink,
yes.
Netcom. I don't know why they're refusing mail from Gmail. It probably means that those people aren't getting a lot of mail since almost, you know, everybody uses Gmail now. And, you know, if it were the other way around, I might understand it because Gmail, in order to reduce spam, a good inbound emailer will do a lot of things like reverse DNS. They'll do some authentication things like DKIM and SPF and stuff. And they may refuse mail from a server that doesn't identify properly, you know, doesn't follow.
Well, there's something about MX records or something like that.
Yeah, that sounds to me like Earthlink, Netcom, and Mindspring are misconfigured in some strange way.
And I've done this for years, and all of a sudden on May 5th, this started.
It happened on May 5th.
Yeah, for whatever reason.
It sounds to me like, I would guess, because, and again, Google is very modern.
Yes.
And it's probably that on May 5th, they flipped a switch for some new standard that Mindspring, Netcom, and Earthlink aren't currently adhering to. I'm going to have to do some research.
Well, I think I thought I might email. Who do I email at Earthlink? You know, like admin at Earthlink?
Yeah, admin at Earthlink would probably do it. Sysop at Earthlink. Yeah, it's something they're doing. And you know what? If it's happening to you, it's happening a lot.
Yep.
So
I would think so.
They'll likely fix it. I'm gonna do a little research. Keep listening,
great,
if you will, because
I sure will. You bet. I've listened to you for years.
Another 30 years before you get your answer. No, I won't do that to you. Thanks, Jim. Leo Laforte, the tech guy.
All right, Leo. Thank you very much.
Our show today brought to you by LastPass. You know, I come to you from the beautiful LastPass studios in Petaluma, California. We thank LastPass because they not only they make it possible for us to bring you the Tech Guy podcast, but they make it possible for you to secure your passwords, to keep yourself safe. If you're working from home, I've used LastPass for a decade now as my personal password manager. We started using it at Twit, I think, before we moved, right? So 4 or 5 years ago, we used LastPass Enterprise. And now I'm so glad because almost all our employees are working from home. You know, it's important when you're in business to plan for the unexpected. I didn't expect that we would be sending our employees home. But the beauty about LastPass, it can be deployed quickly in the midst of any event to make sure your business keeps running smoothly and every employee logs in securely no matter where they are. There's some features of LastPass my employees love, and I love. Single sign-on, for instance. This makes you more secure, but it's still easier than passwords. With single sign-on, you start using the app. It puts a notification on your phone. You say, yeah, that's me, and you're in. And that's more secure than a password, and it's so much easier. Employees love it. And IT loves it because they always have insight into exactly who can access what from where. Of course, it's got the best enterprise-grade password management in the world, giving IT complete oversight. You've got enforceable policies across all password-protected accounts. Again, when you got employees taking your stuff home, it's really nice to know they're taking home LastPass with them. I love the multi-factor authentication. It gives you additional factors to prove that that user is the user they say they are. Biometric, touch ID, face ID, but also contextual factors, geolocation, IP address. It makes the process easy for employees. You know, if you're using a VPN, as I hope all our employees are, I'm sure they are, when they log into our VPN, LastPass does the authentication using multi-factor. It makes it even more secure. Businesses have to think about additional layers of defense beyond the password. LastPass is the most secure solution. They never send or store the master password. If LastPass can't access your data, then hackers can't, so they don't want it. And that works great. Encryption happens exclusively on the device before syncing to LastPass for safe storage, so only users can decrypt their data. That means I trust LastPass like a secure enclave on my phone, on my laptop. In fact, it's the first thing I install when I got my new iPhone SE. Well, you better believe it. I installed LastPass immediately. It's not just passwords on here. I've got my driver's license, my passport, my social security numbers, everything. Everything is in here, and it's secure. 256-bit AES encryption, strongest encryption you can get. It's fantastic. LastPass protects while providing seamless workflow for your employees. Account access and passwords can be shared securely between employees no matter where they are, even if they're remote. They'll get secure access to their work applications with single sign-on. They get that great password management. There's even an offline mode for password and management and multi-factor authentication. So if your employees, like John from Fresno, are in a sketchy spot, they can still get what they need. LastPass can help make remote work simple and secure. Visit LastPass.com/twit to find out how they can help your business stay productive and secure no matter what. LastPass.com/twit. It's time for our car guy, Sam Abul-Samad. He is a principal researcher at Guidehouse Insights, does a car podcast called Wheel Bearings at wheelbearings.media, and is my personal car guy. Hey, Sam.
Hey, Leo. How are you today?
I'm great. You have a bunch of cars behind you wrapped in plastic. You know, I saw the other day some beautiful old, I think they were Corvettes, that had been stored and then moved and stored again and then moved, sold and stuff. And they were not looking great. And I thought it's kind of a shame that this vintage collection, I think it's I want to say, who was it? Whose collection was it? It was a famous person's collection, and it got moved around a lot.
I think I remember seeing this. I can't remember whose it was.
But they looked like they were in terrible shape. They had been stored in garages in New York City and then moved and moved and moved. And it just felt bad to me that these beautiful old cars were all kind of – oh, it was Peter Max's collection, the artist Peter Max.
Yeah.
36 Corvettes.
If you're gonna store vehicles for long, extended periods of time, you know, there are some things you need to do to protect them. You know, personally, you know, like I have a 30-year-old Mazda Miata that I don't drive in the wintertime. And so, you know, when I park it in the garage and, you know, around in December and don't drive it until March, I have a car cover that I put on it.
Yeah.
You know, so if you're I mean, that's, you know, for what's going on right now, that's probably, you know, more than most people need to do. But, you know, if you do have something that you're not going to be driving for, you know, months or years at a time, you definitely want to protect
look
your investment.
Dusty, you know, these old, get a cover. These beautiful vets. They're just so gorgeous. Yeah,
I actually saw there was a video I watched recently from some guys. They have a company that actually produces a product for restoring paint, you know, for cleaning up, you know, when you've got that caked on dirt.
You're need it for this one. Cards.
Yeah, well, they were doing it on what was it? I think a Bizzarini. It was an early 70s, car. It was very rare. Sports car, yeah. And it had been sitting in a warehouse, you know, as part of this collection for, better part of 40 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, they went in, you know, and they videotaped how they actually got it, you know, all cleaned up after this time.
So I'm looking at this beautiful 1956 Chevy Corvette convertible. I'm looking at the tire. It's just flattened, right? It's covered in dust. I also have to think, if there's any gas in the gas tank, it's turned to shellac by now.
Yeah.
This car is shot. Like it's going to be hard to get it going again.
Well, it's not shot. I mean, it can be brought back to life, but it's going to take some work. So, you know, if it's, you know, if the car's not going to move for more than a few months, you know, the gasoline in the tank will get oxidized. And, you know, ideally, you know, if you know it's going to be a relatively, you know, restrained period of time, you know, even a few months, the best thing to do is, you know, fill the gas tank all the way up, you know, take it to a gas station, fill the tank up, minimize the amount of air that's in the tank.
Oh, okay.
That will help preserve the gas.
See, I would have thought you drain it, but you don't want to. You want to fill it up. You don't want any air in there.
You could also drain it as an alternative, but that's
hard to do and dangerous.
It's dangerous. You have to put it somewhere.
Yeah.
The easier thing to do is to just fill it all the way up to the top.
Okay.
To minimize the amount of air that's in there. And you can also get fuel stabilizers. That'll help, to keep it from breaking down. With the oil and other fluids, you know, the thing I've suggested before is just go out once a week and just start the car, let it run for 5 or 10 minutes. You know, just get it warmed up.
Yep.
And circulate the fluids. And
that's what I've been doing. That's what I've been doing. Yeah. And then because I don't want the tire to get a flat spot, I drive it around a little bit so it'll be on different part of the tire.
Take it around the block or even just, move it back a few feet and forward, you know, just so it's not resting on the same spot on the tires all the time.
Right.
And check the tire pressures. Make sure your tire pressures are still okay. You know, in a case like what you were showing with these Corvettes, if cars are going to be sitting there for years, you know, when you bring them back to life, you know, the rubber will eventually get hard and crack. So you don't want to go out and drive on 30-year-old tires.
No.
in that case, you know, what they would do is actually take the tires off, put some new tires on, in the gas tank, you know, you probably remove the tank, clean it out, before you start the car. My friend Richard Truitt, who is an engineering reporter for Automotive News, actually did a really cool project last year. He bought an old, I think it was a 77 Triumph TR7.
Oh, I always wanted one of those.
In a barn for 10 years.
Beautiful.
He chronicled the whole process over several months of, you know, restoring this car, bringing it back to life for a series in Auto Week. I think it was a 14-part series that he did. And I'll find the link and drop it in the chat. He did things like replace the tires, replace the brakes. He took, you know, but I mean, he loves to work on cars. He does car restoration as a hobby. But, you know, for everybody right now that's in this situation where we're not supposed to be going anywhere, we're supposed to minimize our driving around, you know, basic things like, you know, just start the car and let it run for a little bit every week, and move it, you know, so you're not flat spotting the tires. The other thing that Dr. Mom Grandma asked about in the chat was rodents eating wiring.
Oh,
and this is a problem.
Dear. Really?
This is another reason to go out and start the car. But also just, you know, go out, pop the hood, you know, do a little inspection, make sure nobody's building a nest, building a new home under the hood of your car. Because the plastic insulation on your wiring harness, for some reason, that does seem to attract rodents. They like to chew on it. And if they chew through the insulation, then you can start to get shorts. The bare wires can end up touching each other. And so that's obviously not a good thing. In some cases, they might chew right through the wiring as well. That's been known to happen. And then you go out and try to start the car and nothing happens. So definitely do that You know, go out, just go out, check around, make sure there's no, you know, look for any signs of mice or other rodents, you know, any droppings or, you know, anything that looks like it's been chewed on. And maybe even, you know, stick a mouse trap, you know, stick a couple of mouse traps under
Steve
the hood.
In our chat room is from San Diego, says, I put a flashing LED in my engine compartment to scare the rodents away, and it worked.
That's worth a shot.
Yeah.
Got nothing to lose.
Or a stuffed owl.
I tried that. Yeah.
Wow. What about the oil?
Take it out before you actually go to drive away.
Do you want to drain the oil pan? It's not going to be for the quarantine. People are probably going to get in there once in a while, every week or so, and drive around. You don't have to worry about the oil, right?
Yeah. I mean, if it's going to be sitting, you know, like if you're, you know, for example, you know, if you were going on an expatriate assignment for your job and having to move overseas and your car was going to be put in storage for a year or two, then yeah, you would drain the oil out. For a period like this, you know, you can, as I said, if you just go out and start the car, let it run a little bit every week, you'll be fine. You don't need to do that for the oil.
Okay. You know, it's funny. I would have thought, what? I'm going to drive my car, but I've been bicycling to work and trying not to use up any more gas than I have to, and kind of leaving the car in the garage more often, which is great. But it's probably a good idea to kind of be aware of all these things. And if you're not driving, if you're not going anywhere at all, go for a ride. Go for a Sunday ride.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just the weather's nice out, you know, just go for, I mean, I do that with my Miata when it's nice out. Just go for a drive for an hour and, you know, get a little fresh air.
Sam Abel Salmon, you're the best. Guidehouse Insights. Don't forget the podcast, Wheel Bearings. It's at wheelbearings.media, and he joins us every week to talk about cars and car tech. And we kind of avoided Elon Musk this week. always fun, though, I must say. Yeah. Thank you, Sam. We'll see you next time. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Wow. Yeah, he's just he's a never-ending entertained source of entertainment.
That's one way of putting it, yeah.
Jeez Louise. I'm so glad I don't own a Tesla anymore.
He's becoming a little bit too much like that other guy.
Yeah. What other guy?
His name we won't
Howard
mention.
Hughes? Oh, that guy.
That too.
He's walking around with Kleenex boxes on his feet. Yeah, I don't know what it is. It's very strange. Yeah, I think he just wants to get that factory open.
Yeah.
I don't think there's that much demand right now. Which, are they selling? How are cars selling right now?
Let's see. In March, in the second half of March, which was like the last reporting period we've had, because most car makers have gone to quarterly sales reporting now. So when the pandemic or when the quarantines were really getting started in the second half of March, that's when sales really dropped off a cliff.
Yeah.
And they were down about 70-80%. For most areas where sales had stopped or where people were quarantined. Our projection for at Guidehouse is that overall sales this year are probably going to be off about 30-40%. And that's going to be more on the personal use vehicle side. You know, commercial vehicles are still selling. So truck sales, you know, have actually been doing okay. You know, vans, that sort of thing for commercial applications, because they're still having to work. They still need vehicles. And that's actually where we're probably going to see recovery the fastest is in the commercial vehicle sector.
Hmm.
But personal use vehicles, it's going to be a problem for quite a while.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, with 35 million people, you know, unemployed, you know, people are even when we reopen, you know, it's going to take a while to get everybody back to work. And, you know, if you're not working or your salary's been cut and you've been eating into your savings, you're not going to be buying a new car.
Yeah. Well, my daughter's looking for work, of course. And she says, I need a car to look for work. But I don't, you know, it's like, well, she could take the bus, but that seems unsafe. Uber and Lyft seem unsafe. It's just difficult, you know? I don't know. you know, I don't know what to do. I guess we'll get her a car.
It looks like Hertz is probably going to be declaring bankruptcy in the next few weeks.
Wow.
And then there's going to be a whole flood of relatively new used cars available,
good to know.
Which is going to drive down the price of used cars.
Okay. So wait till Hertz goes under.
Yeah, wait till Hertz declares bankruptcy, and then there'll be lots. There's lots of stock of used cars right now anyway.
Well, that's what I figured. I thought, you know, the longer you wait, Abby, the lower the prices are going to get. But that's an interesting wow. It'll be a reorganization, I presume, not a.
Yeah, it'll probably be Chapter 11, but they're going to they're going to be cutting the size of their fleet quite a bit because, you know, part of the problem is that, you know, because nobody's traveling, you know, those are the people that typically rent cars.
Right.
And it's going to take a long time for travel to recover.
Yeah.
So they don't need as many cars in their fleet. So part of that reorganization is going to – they're not going to get rid of, you know, 100% of their fleet, but, you know, they might cut half their fleet.
Oh, so this is – so wait a little bit. When do you think that'll happen?
It could be within the next 3 to 4 weeks is the projections.
I'm going to tell Abby. We're buying a car. We're waiting on Hertz.
Yeah.
Thank you, Sam.
Thank you, Leo. I'll talk to you next week.
Have a great week. Bye. Bye-bye. It's in his Corvette. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The Shoop Shoop song. 8888, ask Leo the phone number. I've been looking around. Jim called with an interesting conundrum. He has a bunch of seniors he helps with their technology. They're using Gmail at his account, too. I guess he's using Gmail. He's sending out emails, and he's getting bounce backs, but it's mostly from older internet service providers, particularly Earthlink, Mindspring, and Netcom. Three of the oldest, actually, internet service providers. And he's wondering, why are they bouncing back? And I've been doing some searching, Jim. I can't find any, you know, magic thing that happened this month that would have changed. As you know, because spam is such a huge problem on the internet, internet service providers and particularly mail providers are doing all sorts of things to kind of try to eliminate spam, to make it harder for spammers to send mail. And it's possible that Earthlink, Mindspring, and Netcom think that those inbound Gmails are spam for some reason. So one suggestion I would have, and it's kind of a onesie-twosie answer, but it probably would work, is to, if you can get a hold of the people you're trying to email, if you can get a hold of them besides email, I guess you can't email them, but some other way, is to ask them to whitelist the email addresses from Gmail in their Mindspring, Earthlink, and Netcom accounts. You know how you can say, these guys aren't spam. I want to get this email. If they can do that in their accounts, then that mail should go through. You're in effect telling those internet service providers, look, I know you think this is spam, but it's not. Please let it through. That's a, you know, a onesie twosie solution, not a grand solution, but it might help at least in the short term. And we'll keep looking. If anybody knows, what would have happened? What would Gmail have been doing all of a sudden? He says it happened May 5th. But sometime in the last 30 days, let's say, that would cause these older internet service providers to reject mail from them. I could see it'd be the other direction, right? That all of a sudden Gmail would say, well, Mindspring, Earthlink, and Netcom aren't doing it right, so we're going to reject it. But I'm sure Google is doing Gmail right. So it can't be something that these older guys are saying, oh, you're not doing it right, kid. It can't be that. It has to be something else. Not sure what it is, though. We'll keep trying. If somebody has an idea or has had this experience and has a solution, you know how to get to me. 8888 Ask Leo or the website techguylabs.com. Eli, San Antonio, Texas. Hello, Eli.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Good.
You know what?
What?
I just can't believe I'm talking to the tech guy. Oh, man.
I'm thrilled to be talking to you, Eli. Everybody's safe, taking care of themselves?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Everybody's good.
Good. Okay. Knock on wood.
Listening to you since the screensavers, you know, call for help. You know, it's just great, man. Thank you for all that
you've done. Wow, it's been a long time. Do you work in tech?
Yeah, yeah. No, 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 I don't. But I'm kind of...
You're a geek, though. You must be.
Kind of geek, yes.
Yeah. So what can I do for you, Eli?
Well, there's this this new product from Lenovo. I don't know if you've heard about the IdeaPad Duet. It's like a Chromebook tablet.
Yes.
And I just wanted to you know, what are your thoughts about it? I'm really interested.
Is this for you or for a kid?
No, it's for me.
It's for you. So you've heard me talk a lot about Chromebooks. I like the idea of Chrome OS because it's more secure, because it's more limited. So sometimes people go, but I can't do this. I can't run Microsoft Office and whatever it is. So if there are some things, if you're a video editor or a photographer, you may say, well, a Chromebook, I need something a little different. But for what most people do, banking, email, surfing the net, shopping online, I think Chrome OS is a great choice. And I generally recommend it for people unless they know they need to do something that they can't do on Chrome OS. And it's pretty capable, especially now they've added the Android store. So you can put many Android apps on there, which adds to the capability. The Duet, the idea of the Duet is it's influenced by Microsoft's Surfaces and the iPad. It's a tablet. Primarily a tablet with a detachable keyboard. That's, I guess, why they call it a Duet, right?
Okay.
It can do both things. If you don't mind the keyboard, my problem with those, and it applies to the Surface, it applies to the iPad with the smart keyboard, is they're not the best keyboards because they're detachable. On the other hand, it makes it very lightweight. It makes it very convenient. And if you wanted to use your Chromebook as just a tablet, you know, to watch movies or whatever, you just attach the case. And there it is. It's a tablet. So, and the price is right. It's not very expensive. I think it's a good product. I think Lenovo makes excellent Chromebooks. I generally buy the Chromebooks that are more like laptops, just because I like a little bit firmer keyboard. I'm looking at Best Buy for the Duet. $299 is a great price. That's one of the reasons I like Chromebooks. It's a decent screen, 10-inch screen. You don't care about how much storage is on a Chromebook because mostly you're storing stuff on Google Drive, on the cloud. It looks like a pretty nice device. What do you want to do with it?
You know, just a daily driver, my email.
So. Yeah, perfect for that. Before you buy, if you get a chance, I don't know if you can nowadays, go into a store and see if you like that keyboard. That would be my only limitation on that. They give a little bit when you're typing on them. A lot of people don't mind them, honestly, at all. In that price range, you're not going to find anything that has a built a keyboard except another Chromebook. You can't, there's no Windows machines or anything like that. So I think this is a good, for that price, I think it's a very good choice. And, man, it's a lot more secure, a lot more secure.
Oh, yes, that's my other point. Since it's Chrome, it's
so safe. Yeah.
Right.
And now the only thing chat rooms reminded me is lapability. You don't, because of the way this works, you're not going to put it on your lap. If you have it on a table or a desk or anything solid, it's fine. But it's hard to use this on your lap. A laptop would work better for that.
Okay. And can I ask you one more question?
Sure.
This is in regards to Linux. I've been listening to you for a while and I switched from Windows to Linux. I'm using, Linux Mint?
Mint? Yeah. Yes. Good man. I love it.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Really awesome.
And the commands, I noticed that the commands are kind of similar to DOS. Like when you make it.
Oh, yeah. Once you get to the command line. In fact, that's the real power of Linux is the command line. It is like DOS. It's not exactly the same. You'll learn some new commands. Instead of DIR to get a directory, you type LS to list a directory. But otherwise, it's very similar. And man, it is. It's also has the advantage of being very secure, very stable, and it's free. So I think if you've got an older machine, putting Linux on there, Linux Mint's a very good one because it looks a lot like Windows. I think that's a great choice. You know, Chrome OS is actually Linux under the hood. So you'll have two Linux laptops if you get this this Chrome OS tablet. Eli, it's nice.
Is there a way that I could do?
Go ahead.
Is there a way that I could put multiple boots?
Sure.
you know,
Papa not on the Chromebook, not on the Chromebook. Although you can get Linux working on a Chromebook, it's actually very cool. If you look up Crostini, C-R-O-S-T-I-N-I, you can find the instructions. It's supported by Google. It lets you run a Chromebook, Chrome OS, but Linux in the terminal. So you can actually have a Linux machine on that Lenovo Duet as well.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Leo.
Eli, it's a pleasure. Don't be a stranger now. It's been too long.
Oh, yes, yes.
Now that you've been on, you call back soon, okay?
Thank you.
Have a good one. Take care. Thank you, Eli. Stay safe. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. 888-827-5536, toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. We can also converse in our chat room at irc.twit.tv. Stands for Internet Relay Chat, irc.twit.tv. And then, of course, the website is techguylabs.com. Zoom was down this morning. Did your church services get interrupted? 9 o'clock Eastern time. Zoom, the video conferencing service that seems like everybody uses these days, went down in the Northeast as well as Texas, Florida, and California. It was out for about 3 hours. Right during church services, I know a lot of churches, I know a lot of our listeners use Zoom to share those services. Yikes. Zoom's message on their website, we sincerely apologize for any inconvenience this might have caused. Zoom users impacted by this issue should now be able to host, join, and participate in Zoom meetings if they restart their sessions. It was limited, they say, to a subset of users, but it was down. It wasn't just you, it was down. And I think a lot of people scrambled and found other solutions. So Zoom's got to be careful here. It's pretty easy to try Google Meet, Microsoft Teams, Facebook now has Facebook meetings. I think they're up to 50 people. Might be enough for a small service. There are a lot of choices out there now. It's a very competitive space. I've talked to so many people wondering, why did Zoom get, you know, become the winner in this? All of a sudden, they went from 50 million active users in December to 200 million in March. Just boom. And I think that it's grown even more since then. And, of course, you probably saw all the security issues and so forth. And Zoom's worked very hard to fix all those problems. And I think they probably have. They've certainly hired enough people to do it. But I just don't understand. I mean, is it because it's so easy to use? I guess that's it. A lot of businesses use Cisco's WebEx, GoToMeeting, Microsoft Teams, Google's meeting, I mean, is there, or Meets. There's a lot of other choices out there. I'm not sure. Some reason Zoom just took off, except this morning. It didn't take off. Ryan, New York City is next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Ryan.
Hey, Leo. Great to talk to you. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
At the risk of being cliche, listening to you for 15 years, screensaver days, wow. You know the rest of the story, right?
Oh, hey, that's a cliche. I love reliving. I don't mind that at all. Thank you.
Well, you're my hero. Question for you. So I'm in a small New York City apartment, thick walls, pre-war plaster, and we're having a Wi-Fi signal problem.
Yeah.
So I've got the Google Wi-Fi mesh routers, not the latest Nest ones, but the last generation. And we had two of them, thinking that would help. But now that my wife and I are both working from home, we noticed the speed dropped.
Yeah, this is suddenly become a universal concern, right? And it's not, by the way, just those plaster walls or the router. It's the fact that everybody else in your building is home working.
That's true.
Right?
I would think we have Fios gigabit.
Oh, yeah, you should have plenty of speed.
I'll tell you, though, I unplugged one of the mesh routers. It got better.
Oh.
But then the other room is low. It's slow. So it's like, I'm not sure what to do. Do I upgrade the routers? Do I just accept that it's going to be slow in certain places.
I'll be honest, I'm a huge fan of the Google mesh routers. They're not the best ones out there. I've tried them all. Now there's new ones. So I tried them all until the new ones started coming out. And I found that the Googles were not the best out there. They're fine for a small apartment. But if you're having issues, for instance, it shouldn't slow it down to have another one connected. In a properly designed mesh, in fact, that's the real difference in a mesh router. It is normal for your system to slow down when you put on an extender, because what happens is the system spends half the time talking to the extender, half the time talking to you. So an extender cuts Wi-Fi in half. And this was supposedly the benefit of mesh, is it has a back channel to the access point so that when it's talking to the access point, it doesn't slow down then your connection to it. But maybe the Google isn't as well designed perhaps as some of the other ones. There are definitely speed differences. If you go to the wirecutter.com, which is a great site for testing and so forth, their recommendation for Wi-Fi, I haven't gone there recently. I should probably check because they change all the time.
One thing I did notice on their app is that my laptop in the living room was connecting to the access point further away from it.
Oh, that's not good. Yeah.
Closer.
Yeah.
So maybe it is the hardware. Maybe
I have to look at it. They like the Eero's. I like the Eero's too, but the Eero's are not cheap. They're pricey.
Okay.
Eero.com. The similar, very much so to the Google, you'll have a base station which you'll plug in next to your modem or your Fios box, and then you will add beacons, and you'll use the app to place the beacons. And you, how big is the apartment?
800 square feet.
Yes, so you probably don't need more than one beacon. The key is going to be, and you know, you might be able to get this to work better if you just try this with the Google routers, is line of sight, because it's not going to go through those plaster walls. So ideally, the second unit can visually see the first unit, and then your wife can visually see the second unit. So you're kind of bouncing it, if you see what I mean.
I didn't know that. Okay, I'll try that.
Yeah. The walls are actually a big problem because they're plaster. There probably is metal in there, horsehair. Who knows what they put in there? but those are definitely, I mean, they're great walls. That's why, you don't hear your neighbors, but they're for exactly the same reason, they also don't hear your neighbor's Wi-Fi. This is not unusual. You might also, I don't remember if those Google routers, how many bands they support. I'm sure they have 2.4 and 5. I don't know if they have 2.5G. An inexpensive, in fact, they're free on your smartphone Wi-Fi measuring unit. You can't do them on iPhones, unfortunately. You have to have an Android device or a laptop. You can walk around and see the signal strength. And that might help you in positioning everything as well. And you can even see the bands, and you can see what's happening and why, for instance, it's getting slower when that thing is plugged in. It shouldn't. It might be, though, that because it doesn't have a good back channel, it's communicating, and it is slowing it down, just like an extender would. So before you go out and buy something more expensive, I'd try repositioning.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. And then if you don't have an Android device, there's two or three really good Wi-Fi metering apps available for Android that are free, I believe. But if you don't have that, there's one on Windows and Mac called Insider, and they work as well. Insider has two S's, Insider, from metageek.com. I don't know if they have a Mac version. I should check and see. They certainly do have a Windows version. And the nice thing about Insider is you can see what bands your devices are using. You can see what the strength are. You can see if there's other stuff interfering. I doubt there is, but your neighbors might be. And there's a whole lot of reasons why you can have problems. You have such a small area that, honestly, a good router should be enough. I don't even know if you need mesh, except that those walls are thick and they're blocking it probably, and that might be part of the problem. Android, somebody recommends Wi-Fi AR. I've used a whole bunch of different ones. It's unfortunate because you can't. Wi-Fi analyzer doesn't work on an iPhone because Apple doesn't give third-party apps access to the radio, so it can't measure the signal strength. So you either need to use a computer, laptop ideally, so you can move around, or an Android device. Thank you for the call. This is a common problem. We're all home now using our Wi-Fi, and what used to be okay isn't anymore. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number if you want to talk high tech. Right now, let's go back to the phones and say hi to Mike in Banning, California. Hello, Mike.
Hello there. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Okay. I have a postscript for that Earthlink problem.
Yes.
I noticed about a week ago I wasn't getting email on Earthlink, and I went into my folder, and I noticed I had a lot of spam, and I opened the spam, and sure and heck, that's where all my email was.
Yeah.
Into the spam. Okay, my current problem, I use Gmail, but I use the Microsoft app Gmail, or the mail folder, and I open up my Gmail, and when I go to compose something, and say I put in the first letter is an M,
yeah,
I get a whole list of stuff, including a list of pornography's names. And
what? Thanks a lot, Google.
Yeah, and I go into my contacts, and they're not there. But yet, when I go ahead and enter into my name for who I want the email to go, I get those lists, plus I get other names
yes.
that are on there.
Mindy and Tiffany and okay. I mean, we want to change the autocomplete settings here. And it's my guess that what Outlook's doing is not looking at your contacts, but looking at your mail. And that would be garbage that's in your spam, probably.
Yeah, it was. I had over 200 spam items.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
it was loaded with a horrible...
Oh yeah, it's a nightmare. It's not your fault. It's just the way the world is, and at least it's getting filtered out, thank goodness.
Yeah.
So it's in the Outlook settings. Are you using now? Let me ask you: are you using the web? This Microsoft has totally confused this issue because Outlook can mean many things. Are you using the Outlook program that came with Microsoft Office for your email?
No, it's not an Office, but it's the little blue envelope that you have as a in a taskbar that I put on air. But
okay.
It's the Microsoft one that you can put in three or four different emails.
Yeah. So it's the mail that comes with Windows. And you're on Windows 10?
Right. Windows 10 Professional.
All right. So I'm going to have to see if I can figure out where you turn off autocomplete. It's probably in the settings.
And the other problem associated with that is when I go into contacts and I scroll down and look at a lot of names in there, some of the ones I want to delete, they don't have the little basket to delete them, and they tell you you can't. It says you can modify their plan, but you can't delete them. How do I get rid of those doggies?
Well, and this isn't the best solution. You can one by one right-click on any autocomplete you see and delete it.
Yeah, and, that's what I
yeah, which is kind of annoying. It doesn't. It's still pulling it up, huh?
Yeah. It won't let me delete it.
Would you mind just disabling the thing entirely and just having to type in your emails by hand?
No. I mean, if I go through the contacts and open a list of contacts, I may have, say, in C's, I'll have about a cluster of 10. I'll see one C on air, and I'll say, well, I don't want that one, and I'll click on it and try to delete it. You open up the envelope where it has your name and your email address, and up at the upright corner, most of the time it has a basket where you can delete it, but on some of the names, when I click on it and look up at the top, it doesn't have that, and it says to me, you can't delete these, you can only modify them.
Hey.
Why?
Yeah, well... Man, this is just a nightmare problem. You got to go into the mail settings. You may also need to go into the People app because that's what it's Windows uses the People app to keep track of your contacts. And you might want to go in there and prune out anything that's in there. There is a setting in Mail that will add anything that you get to your contacts. And you don't want to do that. It's nice to have the autocomplete. What we'd like is the autocomplete should just autocomplete from your contact list, from the People app, and not from other places. You can disable all autofill email suggestions if you want in the Mail app, I believe. I don't have it in front of me, so I'm trying to remember. So that would be the first thing I'd do is go into the Mail app. It usually is in the Compose settings and look at autocomplete and turn it off. That will at least get rid of all of those things. But what we'd really like it to do is only have stuff that's actually somebody you know and fill in those. And there may be a setting in there, and I'm just not familiar with this. This program that Microsoft distributes as a mail program is not the best. It's their free. Remember Outlook Express? It's the successor to Outlook Express. And it's not got a lot of features. It should have that, though, to at least either disable autofill. What you definitely don't want to have is it to automatically add everything you get to autofill. There's probably a setting there. And, if there's a third setting, the ideal would be just autocomplete from my contacts. And if that's the case, go into the People app, kill everything that you don't want, just have it be your friends. That's the easiest thing to do, right? Because you'd still like it if you start typing mom, you'd like it to fill in mom's address. It'd be nice. But you don't want all the other stuff that you're getting. Unfortunately, I don't know how. I probably have it here. I can fire it up. I have not used Microsoft's Mail client in a long time. Gmail has a client available that you could use instead that wouldn't do that, I don't think. There's a Gmail client in the Windows Store. And almost any decent email program would probably do a better job than that. Wow. that's kind of no fun. Let me just see if I log in real quickly, if I can see what the settings are. I haven't done it in so long. For a while, I thought that Microsoft had abandoned. Well, this is, yeah, I have that little, I see it now, the little blue envelope. They call it Outlook Mail. That's generous. Let me go into the settings here. I'm sure there's a way to, you know what, I'll tell you what, I'm going to play with it. Coming up, Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, we're going to do a photo assignment review. So if you've got your photos submitted to Flickr, it's too late to do the My Home one. We'll have a new assignment coming up, and we're going to look at the best right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. John says I should tell you all about LinkedIn Learning. Well, okay, I think you're right. You probably already know all about it, right? For years, remember we talked about lynda.com? LinkedIn bought them. They've got the Lynda courses and now many more. In fact, 16,000 courses in all. And some really great ones, too. LinkedIn Learning is the place to go to get new skills in all kinds of areas. How about staying motivated while job hunting? Yeah, digital network strategies, marketing, managing in difficult times. I have to take that one. That's awesome. And the best thing is LinkedIn Learning's got the best teachers, experts in their fields. They're engaging. They're shot well. This ain't your, YouTube video. They've got courseware. They've got quizzes. They've got documentation. There's so much additional information, project files. So you can learn on the go. But do it right. Really, really learn. Productivity tips. Here's one. I've got to take this one. Grit. How teams persevere to accomplish great goals. And here's one for those of you with employees working at home. Managing virtual teams. You're going to get custom-tailored course recommendations. Every lesson will use project files and quizzes so you can practice while you learn. Courses are available anytime, anywhere, on computers, on your phone. And you get a certificate when you complete the course. You can put that on your LinkedIn page so people know you've got those skills. LinkedIn Learning is fantastic. And you can get it for your team, too. It's a great idea. If you're managing a team, it's a faster way to learn and apply new skills to grow your business. Learn from expert instructors. Connect with a global network of experience all on your own time. I've been a fan for years. I've used these for years. We've offered them to our employees for years. We're big fans of that because I think it's really important that you help your employees grow and gain new skills. And LinkedIn Learning makes that so easy. 16,000 courses in every possible area taught by the leaders in the industry. So keep learning the skills you need to rise to any moment. Oh, by the way, we got 1 month free for you. LinkedInLearning.com/techguy. LinkedInLearning.com/techguy. It's always good to keep the brain growing, keep the knowledge going. LinkedInLearning.com/techguy. Don't take my Kodachrome away. It's time for Chris Marquardt, our adept photo guy. He'd normally be out and about. Do you that, Chris, now that you're sheltering at home? Do you think about where you'd be right now?
You know, the interesting thing is that I still have the whole appointment thing in my calendar. So I get calendar reminders. Go to the airport now, that kind of stuff. Your flight is leaving in 2 days.
Oh, how frustrating.
Yes and no. I mean,
I would be on my way to Germany in 4 days.
There you go. Yeah. Yep.
We were going to the Oberammergau Passion Play in Oberammergau, Germany, which was created during the last plague in the 17th or 16th century.
That true?
Yeah. The town fathers said, if the plague passes us over, we promise we will do a passion play every 10 years. And it did, I guess. And so they have every 10 years, they've been doing a passion play. 2,000 members of that little town in the play, thousands of people in attendance, and they do it all summer long, every 10 years. They were going to do it in 2020. I'd always wanted to go. And the plague hit them again. This time, instead of saying, we'll do the play anyway, they thought, maybe we'll just do it next year. How about if we do it next year?
What are we promising ourselves for when this plague is over?
Yeah.
The current one.
Yeah, I'm traveling. And I'll tell you what. Not next year. They're going to do it in 2022. They're going to take off a couple of years and do it in a couple of years. Since 1634, they've been performing that passion play. Anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about today. We're talking about my home. Our assignment was take a picture of your home.
And not only is the participation so much better than other times.
A lot of people home.
People also apparently have a bit more time to think about their compositions and to play with the photos and experiment more. And so I had a very, very hard time choosing photos. And also these pictures have, I don't know what it is, because I guess it's your personal spaces. It's your home, the place where you live that everyone is sharing here, which makes them very like
personal, personal,
very, very, very warm feeling. Yeah, they make a very warm feeling.
Yeah. These are great. Thank you, everybody.
And I've really had a hard time. So I made a choice of three. I was debating if I should take more, but no, we'll stick to the three. And the first one that I chose is by Bob Dunk, Killing Time.
And he's killing time by playing Scrabble.
And not just that, but all the words on the Scrabble board are COVID-related. I mean, there's isolation and coronavirus and cozy and reruns and
going nuts. I love it.
So that's a wonderful idea to put this together. There's a couple of glasses of wine on the table. There's a bottle with some yummy Sonoma wine. And so it's really kind of an invitation into Bob's
nice
house.
Nice job, Bob.
In a very humorous way.
Yeah, really great.
The second one is a very different kind of picture. It's a black and white picture by Gregory Chesney. Watching Paint Dry is the title. Oh. And it's a self-portrait. I wouldn't even call it a selfie. It's a self-portrait. And it's black and white. It's kind of on the darkish side. He's not even very well in focus in the picture, but it tells a story. There's someone, and the title, What Watching Paint Dry, someone waiting at home. And so a bit of a more of a gloomy mood here. And that's very well portrayed. I looked through his other photos, and he's not always that sad in his pictures. So very good job at that.
This is a really nice picture. I really like it. Yeah.
And it's powerful. I think it's powerful.
Yeah, yeah, really great. It does look like he's wearing underwear on his head, but other than that,
I don't know what it is. It might be a t-shirt. Oh, it
could be a t-shirt. All right.
It's like a face mask, but for the hair, maybe.
Yeah. It's very powerful. Beautiful.
Last but not least, Tom Downing. I don't think this is a shot that was set up. I think it's just something that happened. There's
somebody's
a dog and a plush toy, but the plush toy is ripped to shreds, and the innards of it, the stuffing, is all out in the room, and the dog just, well, looks the way a dog does after it's done something that it was not supposed to do. So I think the dog murdered the plush fox. And
that's eviscerated just him.
it's just one of these moments, you know. It's a story. You don't need to explain anything. It just is so clear what happened. And the photo, yeah, I like it. Light is nice too. I mean, the light from the window light, indirect window light, beautiful. Colors are nice. So technically perfect, but also just from a story point of view, it was delightful. So that's our three photos. And
great. Thank you, everybody.
Very happy with what came in. Again, there's almost 60 photos in there, and I could pick any other photo. And great stuff. So we have a new assignment, and I like the my home photo so much that I thought of something that, again, might be something that will, where you would allow us a bit into your life and show us something. And we're going by the alphabet. So after M is N, and the next one would be normal.
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 What does it even mean?
Well, and it means something different for everyone. So
yeah,
I'm really interested. I'm really looking forward to what's coming out of that. Everyone has time. They take a lot of photos. So
getting back to the new normal. Well, that's fun. Well, this is a great opportunity. Now, you submit your photo. It's easy to do by, first of all, taking it. And it doesn't have to be a fancy camera. You can use your smartphone. It's not the quality of the hardware. It's the quality of the photographer we care about. And what you do with the assignment. Nature is a pretty broad, I mean, normal is a, it could have been nature, but it was normal is a pretty broad brush. It could be a variety of things. Take that picture, tag it. TG Normal, TG for Tech Guy and Normal. Upload it to Flickr, tag it TG Normal, and submit it to the Tech Guy group. Renee Silverman, our moderator there, is great. She'll say, oh, thank you. And we'll put it in the pool. And you got about a month, so you can submit a new picture every week, up to four pictures. And Chris will review those in a month. I would send you to Chris's wonderful website, where you can dream about all of the wonderful workshops and travel you could do. DiscoverTheTopFloor.com.
Send them to the places. Podcast. That's the better address right now.
Tips from the Top Floor is TFTTF.com. Tips from the Top Floor, TFTTF.com. It's a great photography podcast. He also does podcasts about computational photography, smart photography, and you've got books about film photography and wide-angle photography. It's all at TFTTF or tipsfromthetopfloor.com. Chris, it's always a pleasure. We're both grounded for the time being, but that's all right. We can dream. We can think about the places we would be.
I'll be back next week. Nowhere to go right
now. Not so bad. It's not so bad at all. Chris Marquardt. TipsFromTheTopFloor.com. I'm going to get out there. I'm going to take some pictures this time and participate. What does normal mean to you? Normal. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you, Leo.
Normal. All right, Chris. Stay well.
You asked about the HDMI out of my camera. It's going into an Elgato Cam Link.
Oh, you have a Cam Link. Okay, cool.
It's a Cam Link into USB.
That seems to be the best way to do it. It really looks good.
It plays nice as a webcam in Skype and everything in OBS. And by the way, OBS, just there's a guy who... OBS on Windows can act as a webcam itself.
Right.
So you can do all the mixing and everything. On Mac, that wasn't possible. But now someone has just released the first version of a plugin that does that. So there is a webcam out plugin for OBS on the Mac now, which I'm not using right now. It's just straight into the camera, straight into the Cam Link. Well,
all right.
What do we do?
I'm using the ATEM Mini, and I've got a three camera setup. I just need to get some lights in my office.
Yeah, I still have the need to do most of that somehow in software in one computer because I don't have the
You don't
multiple
want to take
sources
over
coming in. But the ATEM Mini would be a pretty good one if I.
I'm thinking I had this like is a backup so I could do the show from home.
Oh, right? totally.
And I need is three cameras. One, two. A computer.
So you're doing this through the ATEM Mini right now?
No, but I could. This is TriCaster right now, but essentially I could. In fact, we even rolled 20 seconds of the background that I could loop, and you would never know that I'm not actually here.
All right,
wouldn't that be funny?
That's funny.
I may not be. Who knows? No one knows. All right, Chris, have a great one. Take care.
See you in a week.
Bye. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo the phone number. John in Fresno, California. Hello, John.
I'm lucky to speak to you. It's a long ways away, but I got your signal today.
Oh, nice. Well, welcome.
I've got a couple of real basic questions. You were speaking with a man in San Antonio, and he has a Chromebook. Can a Chromebook be adapted with a smartphone where you speak into it, or is it strictly all finger work?
Are you blind?
I'm 72, and I'm not too smart.
And you don't want to type, huh? Yes, absolutely. You can dictate to a Chromebook. It has the Google Assistant built in, and many Chromebooks now have a button on the keyboard that you press to get the assistant to wake up and listen.
Okay.
And you can dictate, but you're going to, the reason I asked if you were blind, I don't know if there are good screen readers for the Chromebook, and you will probably want to do some keying, but if you don't like to key, but you know, you mostly want to talk. Yes, absolutely. Chromebook's good for that. You might just want to look at getting a Google Assistant instead. One of the little Google Home devices.
Well, that wasn't my main question why I called, but that was a question I thought I'd throw at you.
Well, good. What's your main question?
My main question was I was looking at these plans because all the libraries are shut down, so I can't go to the libraries now. And I was thinking about getting a little smartphone. Now, the plans are like a 1 gigabyte. And my question I have asked is if you just leave your phone on whatever for an average whatever they charge or whatever, mostly it's just research, but say if you left it on starting at 1 o'clock, how long would it take to run that gigabyte out?
You mean listening to music or watching movies or what?
No, just say this, how long does a gigabyte last?
Well, that's a good question. It depends on how much data you use. You're talking about the amount of data that you have in your plan. A gig is a little low. You're going to be doing, but it depends what you're doing. Are you doing email? Every time you talk to Google Assistant, it does go out to the server and process it and then come back with its answer. So that uses data. If you use maps, that uses data. Phone calls do not use data. Text messages usually don't, but sometimes they do, depending on the circumstance. Messaging with Facebook or something else will. What do you want to use your phone for?
Well, basically just research, you know, maybe location of business.
Right. And remember, when you're at home, do you have Wi-Fi at home?
No, I don't. I live out in the country.
Got it. So it will always be using data. So every time. So if you're doing a lot of web surfing on a phone, I think a gigabyte's a little low. I think anything from 3 to 5 might do you. There are also services you can inquire about that charge data as you go, and that might be a better solution for you, at least the first time. You have no way, you know, for most people, I say, well, look at your bill and you'll know how much data you need, but you don't have any bill previous experience with data, so you don't know how much data you're going to use.
Well, this would be just basically service plan through I guess, track phone.
Yeah, track phone, yeah. So you pay for a gigabyte up front, and then how much do they charge for additional data if you go beyond the gigabyte?
I don't remember.
So that's what to look at is what the charge for data if you go beyond. TrackPhone is a pay as you go system, so you don't pay up front. I'm not sure how they do the data on a TrackPhone, to be honest with you. So they're saying you get a gigabyte of data a month. Is that what they say?
Yes, that's what you buy. $20, you get a gigabyte.
Okay. Well, you could try it and then see if you go past it. I would guess that you're going to go past it, but it's completely dependent on what you do. So I can't tell you how long a gigabyte will last. I'm looking, if you do 3 gigabytes is $30. 3 is probably enough for you. But that may be more than you can afford. I don't know. And I see I'm looking at the plans now. The $20 is a gig. That's pretty low. That service is really for people who are going to make mostly phone calls, right?
I see. Yeah. Well, so if you want to get some information on parts, availability of parts, or maybe destinations, addresses, things like this, it's pretty simple. I'm not an emailer.
I know, but you know these websites these days, they don't really consider people who are on limited data plans. And, you know, one web page can be hundreds of megabytes. You go through a few of those and you're going to hit a gigabyte pretty quick. So that's the problem. It's unpredictable. So a website certainly doesn't have to be that fat. But nowadays, people who design sites don't really think about, how much data users are using, because most users aren't paying attention to that anymore.
Yeah. So, some of these people are telling me how much they use, and I can't believe what.
Oh, I know. I know.
It's mind-boggling.
I would look at, for instance, I'll give you an example. Google has a service they call Google Fi. This is going to be very dependent, because you're in a rural area, on which carrier is best for you, because not all cell phone carriers will work where you are, probably. But Google Fi is $20 for unlimited talk and text, and then you pay as you go for the data, $10 a gigabyte. So it's going to be more up front. That might be too much. Let me think. Mint Mobile, which is what I use, is pretty affordable too, because you pay up ahead of time. It's not a pay-as-you-go. You pay for the plan. Look at mintmobile.com. They're a sponsor of ours. And they have a plan. It's $15 a month with 3 gigabytes. But that's their introductory plan. The one I pay for is $25 a month, and I get 12 gigabytes. But here's the but. You ready for the but?
Yeah.
They use T-Mobile as their network, and I don't know how T-Mobile is in your neck of the woods.
It's in the area. Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
Then I would look at Mint Mobile.
Okay.
Because they're going to be a little more affordable than TrackPhone. It's still unlimited calls, unlimited text nationwide. And if you pay $300 for the whole year, in other words, $25 a month, that's 12 gigabytes a month. That's a lot. You won't go through that much.
Okay.
You could probably use one of those smaller plans.
Well, Leo, thank you for helping, you old guy.
Hey, anytime. Thank you for listening, John.
Thank you very much.
Great to talk to you. Take care. How long will a gigabyte last? Well, that depends. If you, I mean, if you start listening to music, it won't last you a day. You know, I mean, it can go through that pretty quick. If you start watching YouTube videos, you know, you'll run through it pretty quick. But if email isn't too bad, surfing the web is actually surprisingly heavy. There's a lot of websites, they don't pay too much attention to how much data you're using, which is a shame, if you ask me. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all that jazz. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you can still reach us. You just use Skype out. Javi's trying to reach me in Barcelona. Hard to get through. I didn't say it'd be easy. But if you've got Skype and Skype out and you got the ability to call a phone, at least it won't cost you anything. TechGuyLabs.com is the website. TechGuyLabs.com. And again, the phone number, 888-827-5536. Tom in Toronto, Canada. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Leo. How you doing?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
Good, good. We've talked a few times before. Actually, all the way back to Call for Help days.
I used to do it in Toronto with Amber MacArthur and Andy Walker. Oh, yeah. Sean Carruthers. Had so much fun up there. I loved it.
Yes. So anyways, my question is, I just ordered the new Pixel 4 XL for me and my wife.
Nice. I think you're going to like it. Yeah, nice phone.
Yes, I'm using it right now. I haven't slapped in the SIM card yet. I want to try it before.
I should mention that the Pixel 4a
yes.
is probably going to come out in the next week or so.
Oh, I know.
Okay.
I've been looking at that.
Yeah.
The thing is, when I ordered this phone, I'm with Fido, by the way. And when I ordered this phone, the Samsung S10 Plus was like $400 more up front.
Yeah.
This one was the zero up front. But then all of a sudden now I see they've changed it, and the Samsung is basically the same price as this one.
I like the Google Pixel much better.
You stick with the Google
Pixel? Yeah, I have both. I have an S10 Plus, and I have a Pixel 4 XL. The problem I have with Samsung, okay, the Samsung screen, superb. The problem I have with Samsung is all about software. It's a little janky. UI. Their camera app is got a lot of weird, janky stuff you'll never use. Just gets in the way. They customize Android quite a bit, and they put their own apps on there. So you'll have the Samsung Gallery plus Google Photos.
That's right.
You'll have the Samsung browser plus Google Chrome, and it kind of bugs me.
I've been using Pixel phones for Google.
Well, then you're used. If you're used to Pixel, stick with Pixel.
Yeah. I'm just thinking of the some of the issues with these phones is Pixel phones is the battery life.
The S10 might be a little better in battery life. S10 is a very nice phone.
I'd say the only two downfalls with the S10 is the curved screen. A lot of people don't like it.
That never bothered me. And I do think Samsung has better screens than Google. The S10 screen is as good as it can get. Yeah, it's
absolutely
gorgeous.
Absolutely.
But after a while, you get over that screen and it's like, fine. The Pixel's fine. The other problem the Pixel has, some people complain about some hardware issues, sound problems, things like that. I haven't experienced any of those. I think the Pixel's a very nice phone. Now, if it's the same price as an S10...
Plus,
that's an interesting conundrum. I see your problem. I see your challenge. The advantage of the Google is
the updates.
Well, that's what I was just about to say. The Google phone is pure Android, and it's going to be updated longer than the Samsung, and it's updated quicker than the Samsung, which is even maybe more important. Those monthly updates.
Let me ask you: with the S10 Plus right now, what's it on? Is it on? It's on 10.
Yep, it's on 10. I think I'll have to look at it. I think it's got the April update on it. Might be the March update.
So what I'm saying is going forward 2 years from now, would they still keep updating that phone?
Well, I can't remember what the commitment is.
Right.
I think it's 2 years.
Samsung, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's 2 years.
Right.
So, and it's up to them. And the problem is Samsung adds one more layer in between you and Google. So those updates.
Their UI. Yeah.
Yeah. The updates, they're slower because of it. So it's
and then
that Samsung
Fido
layer.
Here would have to update it here.
Yes, right? Fido gets in the way too. Yeah, Fido's the Canadian carrier he's on.
That's right.
Yeah, Fido gets in the way. Your carrier gets in the way. Your OEM, your manufacturer gets in the way. So if you get a Google phone, especially if you, well, you're still using it through Fido, but if you get a Google phone, you eliminate one filter. Yeah.
Right. And the Google phones are completely unlocked compared to the Samsung.
Yes.
Phone, but.
Yeah, you can root them and everything if you want. And
unlock their SIM card. They're like,
that's right. They're carrier unlocked and they're root. They're rootable. They're
rooted,
bootloader unlocked. The other thing is battery life. I think it's fine. I haven't had any problem with
it's
this.
It's fine?
Yeah, I can't.
Apparently with some of the updates, it's helped a little, I think I heard.
I never noticed a problem, to be honest.
Okay.
Pixel, you may remember when the Pixel 4 came out, the internet was mean.
Yes,
internet acted like Google had stolen their firstborn. I mean, they were so mean about it. And I think it got a raw deal. I thought it was a pretty a fine phone. I admit it's a little frustrating to pay $1,000 for it, but you're not anymore.
Yes. And that's just that they've given me a really good deal. It's only $33.33 a month.
Yeah.
You know, for 2 years. So that's not bad. It's $800 basically for the phone. Canadian. That's Canadian.
That's not bad, is it?
Here it's $1,240 for the phone. For 128.
Ow. Yeah.
Yeah. It's expensive.
That really, I think the phone companies.
Oh, the phone company is $1,500 if you want to buy it.
But I mean the manufacturers. I think, and even Google's in this, Apple, certainly Samsung, they just overcharge. And
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. So you're smart. You waited. You're waiting till the 4A comes out, and the 4A will drive the price down anyway. So that's why Fido's reduced that price. The Samsung, Samsung's become very aggressive on pricing on the S series because they're not selling very well.
Yeah, I don't want to even touch the S20 yet. You know,
I wouldn't. I think the S10 is fine.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And then, well, you know what? They've even got their mid-range, the A71.
Not crazy about those. I would stick
you
with
like those?
Flagship. No. Go with the flagship.
Yeah, okay.
Yep.
Yeah, with the glass backs and the charging, wireless charging.
Especially since you're getting a deal. Yeah.
Yes. It is a deal. I think I'll stick with what I got right now.
I like the Pixel. I really do. I would do that, Tom. Now, I'm not. I have to say, there are people in the chat room saying, "Oh, get the S10."
Yeah.
It's there. You know what? The truth is, you're not going to be unhappy in either direction.
Yeah, and then the crossover from my old Pixels will be, you know.
Well, you're already a Pixel user. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Yeah. So, okay.
Stick with the Pixel.
All right, buddy.
I'm glad I could give you the moral courage, Tom, to stick with your Pixel. Well, there is one thing. Does the S10, I think they had the headphone jack, didn't they, on the S10? It's the last one, or did they kill it? Because they don't have it on the Pixel 4. And I that drives me nuts. I want my, give me my headphone jack back. Jack? I think the Pixel probably. Yeah, the S10 still has a jack. It's the last great phone with a headphone jack. They dumped it with a Note. Now it's dumped with the S20. I don't think they'll ever go back. Our show today brought to you, our podcast today brought to you by a very nicely groomed, perhaps you've noticed. By the way, you can use your Manscaped lawnmower everywhere, even on your hair, everywhere. Brought to you by Manscaped Refining the Gentleman. I am a happy Manscaped user. The Manscaped engineering team has just released the new Lawnmower 3.0. It took them 18 months to perfect the greatest trimmer for your twig and berries ever invented. This thing is awesome. First of all, somebody's been using this. Wait a minute. First of all... John, has anybody been in here? First of all, they have ceramic blades, okay, for incredibly sharp blades. Look at them, ceramic. And they've upgraded the motor to 7,000 RPMs with quiet stroke technology. That means a faster motor means a better cut with fewer accidents. In fact, zero accidents. The battery lasts up to 90 minutes. So, you know, bring a friend. And here, I'm going to turn it on. You're going to see one of the coolest features. Look at that, the little LED light. So no matter where you're manscaping, you'll be able to see clearly. That's fairly important. And let's not forget, the Manscape Lawnmower 3.0 comes with its own USB charging stand, which is really nice. So it's always ready when you're ready. I love Manscaped because they're always making products for the gentleman. Look at here. This is, by the way, this what I'm showing you is a lovely kit. This is what do they call this? I have to look it up here. This is the perfect, of course it is, the perfect package 3.0 and peak hygiene plan for the ungroomed in your life. You get your Manscaped Preserver. You get your Manscaped Reviver. You get this lovely Manscaped bag for putting in all your gear when you travel or just, you know, go for a night over. I love it. I think this is fantastic. And, you know, when you subscribe to Manscaped, you get new blades every 3 months. So you are making sure your trimmer always stays fresh and clean. They come right to your door. You can set the length, by the way. I really like this comb. So you can have it be exactly the length you want or just go right in. Go all the way in. Love that. And it's 7,000 RPM. You hear how quiet this is? Like this is just, look at that. Painless, beautiful. What a lovely little clipper this is. If you're looking for a great gift without leaving the house, get that perfect package 3.0. Father's Day's coming up. Great for birthdays. It also includes, where's my newspaper? Oh, yeah, it includes this special Manscaped newspaper. This, you might say, well, I don't need to do any reading. No, but you can spread that out on the floor, and it catches all the little hairs. It even has... It even has a style guide inside so that you can plan your manscaping. If you're not watching the video, you're missing all the fun. I'm just saying you can plan your manscaping ahead of time and do a little architectural, maybe a little a fancy little garden, perhaps. Trim that junk of yours and get 20% off plus free shipping. Manscaped.com. Did you hear that? 20% off. Manscaped. Manscaped.com. Code Tech Guy. It is a great gift. It's a gift you'll have fun with. Ladies or gentlemen, give it to your special friend, and I think they will enjoy this and laugh together, and you'll get what you want, which is a nicely groomed partner. 20% off, too. Free shipping. Manscaped.com. Don't forget the offer code is Tech Guy. Okay? Tech Guy. Tech Guy. We want to make sure they know you heard it here. And actually, I'm not kidding. You can use it all over. Manscaped.com. Offer code Tech Guy. These fine products can be yours. But don't sock it to me by taking away my headphone jack. Jack? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. I'm still burned about that. 8888. Ask Leo the phone number. Back to the phones we go. Line 4 is Ted in San Diego. Hello, Ted. Oh, did I push the buttons right? I did. Hello, Ted. I hear no Ted.
Ted, sir.
Oh, there's Ted. Hello, Ted.
Hey, I've got a question for you. First off, love the show. I really find it fascinating to listen to you during the break. The stuff you're talking
about. Oh, yeah. So when you're on hold, you hear all that, don't you?
Right. I got a question
Sorry.
For you. Like I said, I got a question for you. I'm thinking of upgrading my router.
Yeah.
And I'm a typically a modem. And then a Wi-Fi router, not a combination guy.
That's the way to go. Yeah, separate them out. You bet.
Now, do I need a lot of growth moving forward for
no
Wi-Fi 6?
Not for the modem. For the router, yeah, but not for the modem.
Because but I should get a 3.1 for the
yeah
modem,
DOCSIS. Right? So the cable standard is DOCSIS, DOCSIS, and most cable companies are at DOCSIS 3. Nobody, I don't know of anybody that's at DOCSIS 3.1 yet, but that's coming.
Right.
So it's probably prudent, and it's not more expensive to get a DOCSIS 3.1 modem. If your cable company moves to 3.1, you'll have that capability, and what that means is higher speed.
Right. Now, I'm afraid of maybe going too strong. I'm looking like a Nighthawk in your AC20.
Love it.
Is that like too much, or is that
no.
kind of the sweet spot?
So choosing a router is complicated. It's getting more complicated all the time. So you mentioned Wi-Fi 6. Guess what? Shortly after they started putting out Wi-Fi 6 routers, they announced Wi-Fi 6E because the FCC approved the use of a 6 gigahertz spectrum, a new, entirely new spectrum for Wi-Fi. So if you're getting a router today, that's a good challenge. I don't, you know, currently the Wi-Fi 6 routers are much more expensive because it's the latest, greatest thing. And I think we're going to start seeing 6E routers like later this year. So generally, I'd say wait. If you can, wait and get the 6E router. But if you have to buy today...
Like wait October or wait July?
Well, that's a good question. The FCC's approved it. Router manufacturers say they're going to do it pretty quickly, but the existing Wi-Fi 6 routers cannot. They need new antennas.
You know what I'm thinking? I'm thinking I get a good enough, a nice, I won't say cheap, but kind of cheap, good enough.
Yes. That's a good solution.
3 or 4 months.
There you go. That's a good solution. There's something that can last you a year. It won't be more than a year. And then you'll get the 6E routers when they become available. How big is the area in your house?
1,300 square feet, single story, three rooms. Okay. Not very big.
Not huge. The other thing, by the way, I should point out is you don't get any benefit from Wi-Fi 6 unless you use Wi-Fi 6 clients. So some thing like my new Dell is Wi-Fi 6, my new MacBook Air is Wi-Fi 5, my new iPhone is Wi-Fi 6, my Pixel 4 is Wi-Fi 5. So it doesn't mean that it'll slow down the Wi-Fi 6 devices, but you won't get the benefit of Wi-Fi 6.
And the router is backward compatible. So
that's right.
Okay.
So if you get a Wi-Fi 6 router and you have Wi-Fi 6 clients, laptops. Phones. There aren't a whole lot of them, but all the new stuff will be Wi-Fi 6 going forward. And that's the other thing. Wi-Fi 6E won't make any difference unless you have Wi-Fi 6E devices. Now, E is, I think, mostly intended for Internet of Things devices because as you get to higher frequencies, and 6 gigahertz is microwave, it's a very high frequency, it bounces off most things, including walls, windows, people, dogs.
Well, how does that come into play? Like, I think Ring uses a Z wave.
That's completely different. That's completely different. That's an Internet of Things control protocol that's not related to Wi-Fi at all. It still uses Wi-Fi for the camera, but you could use Z wave. I mean, for some IoT devices, you can Z wave or Zigbee is another technology. That's for controlling it. But you'll still need, if you want to send video over something, you're going to need Wi-Fi.
Well, I tell you, you've answered my question.
No, I've made it worse. I made it much worse. I didn't even get to mesh and all of that stuff. I would get a nice Asus, inexpensive Asus router that does everything you want. Wi-Fi 5 would probably be fine. And then once you have a bunch of Wi-Fi 6 stuff, then you can look at getting a Wi-Fi 6 or 6E router.
Any recommendation?
I like the Asus's. I use Netgear as well, and for mesh I like Eero. But you probably don't need mesh. You have a single router right now.
Yes.
And it gets everywhere in the house.
Good enough.
Yeah. Mesh is really for tricky Wi-Fi situations. Not so much for just general use. It's so expensive.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, get a cheap cheap router. And that's the other thing. You're going to go to the store or go online, and you're going to get sticker shock because it used to be you go out and buy a Linksys for $40. Not anymore. The cheapest routers out there are like $200. They've gotten very expensive. So I'll tell you why I generally say Asus. They created their own firmware, Asus WRT, based on DDWRT, which is an open source firmware. And almost all the Asuses will work with DDWRT. So if at some point you wanted more capabilities, better firmware, you could always upgrade the Asus routers with DDWRT, which is you can look it up, DD-WRT. It's a nice bit of software, and because it's open source, I think it's a little more advanced. DDWRT.com. It's open source firmware for most routers. You also should check before you buy a router. I would probably check. If you're thinking you might want to be that geeky, check the database at DDWRT.com to see if yours will work. See if yours will work. Are there other third party? There used to be Tomato. Remember Tomato router? I think they've kind of gone by the wayside. The other reason that it's nice to have third-party firmware for your router is sometimes router manufacturers most of the time abandon these routers. After a year, they go, we're not going to update anymore. And these horrible security flaws show up. And So Stresa in our chat room is using Merlin on his Asus. It's Asus WRT-Merlin. I haven't tried that .net. You like it? Asus WRT. We'll put this in the show notes. I'm giving you a lot of domain names right now, and I know it's hard to write them all down. This is the firmware, thirdware. I'm familiar with this. This looks pretty much like the Asus firmware, but it has some additional features. They don't tweaks more than anything else. Yeah. Beatmaster says that Merlin is the best firmware for your Asus. I use an Asus in the other room. I'm going to have to put that on there and try it. You got to know what you're doing. You know, you don't want to brick your router. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. More of your calls coming up right after this. The last half hour of the Tech Guy Show. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Thank you, Lady Laura, our musical director, playing those great discs in between. I can't afford a band. We don't have, don't have the Roots playing here. We got Lady Laura, but she's good. She's better than a band. Thank you, Lady Laura. Thanks to Kim Schaffer, even with a flat tire, answering the phones, doing her job, putting you on the air. Thanks mostly to you for listening and calling in. Glad we could get together. Let's do it again next weekend. What do you say? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo the phone number. I've been looking at this Asus alternate firmware for Asus, Merlin. It's funny. It looks just like the Asus firmware. I mean, it's got the Asus branding and everything. And apparently, the creator of this, essentially, he said, I'm not going to add new features. It's not going to be that. I'm just going to fix bugs. I'm going to tweak features. I'm going to emphasize stability. So this is not from Asus, but that's one of the reasons I like the Asus ASUS routers, because you can put your own firmware on there. I'd mentioned DDWRT. Asus uses their own version of it, Asus WRT. And here is his version of Asus's version. It's Asus WRT-Merlin.net. Now, this is fairly advanced. There's always a risk when you're changing the firmware. That's the fundamental software that runs the router, that you could turn it into a very good-looking brick. So unless you're very confident, you really know what you're doing, I'd stay away from that. But a lot of people in the chat room have done it, and they say, oh, it's great. I have to do it. I've an Asus router just in the other room, as a matter of fact. Michael from San Diego, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Michael.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Fairly new listener, first-time caller.
Welcome.
Thank you. Really enjoy your show.
Thanks, sir.
I've been doing this stuff since 1986.
An old-time geek. Long time geek.
I'm not a geek. I hate that word. Maybe it's techie.
Techie. All right. Yeah. All right. Techie. I'll go with techie. All right.
No, geeks wear big thick glasses and, you know,
pocket protectors and short sleeve shirts, little skinny ties. Yeah, that's me. I'm geek, but I'm proud. I don't mind. I think it's an honorific for me. But I honor your decision not to be called a geek. Techie's good. I like techie.
Yeah. Well, the geek meets the techie.
That's it. That sounds like a good show.
Yeah, how about that? Hey, maybe we'll do something together.
We're doing it right now.
Yeah. You know, I've been doing this since 86. I've got... oh, God, maybe a half a dozen, seven friends who depend on me for tech support.
Yep.
Otherwise, they never have a computer.
Yep.
In fact, I solve problems that the companies for the product they have can't even solve them.
Yeah.
Good example was a friend of mine bought a new HP printer, hooked it up, wouldn't work, called HP. She said, I was on the phone 2 hours with them. They couldn't fix it. I knew if I called you, you'd fix it.
Oh, that's great that you're doing that for people. That's great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Took me an hour, had it fixed.
Nice.
Yeah. Anyway, you know, I solved most of my problems, but I've had an issue here, and I thought, oh, what the hell, you know?
I hope you will, by the way, for future, I hope you keep listening, and anytime you hear something and you can help us out, because we have people calling with problems all day, every day. So please be on my team, even if you're not a geek, Michael.
Absolutely. In fact, one of the calls yesterday, I just sat there and shook my head. You know, being on computers since 1986, you may find this hard to believe. I've never lost a file.
It breaks my heart when people call and they've lost data. It's terrible. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to put a new hard drive in, back up everything you've got to an external hard drive first.
This is one thing I try not to be judgmental, Michael. You know, in my head, I might be thinking bad thoughts, but I don't want to be judgmental. We're all human. We all make mistakes. So I always try to help people without judging them.
Yep, no, I understand.
Yep.
Anyway, here's my issue. See if you can figure this out. So I've got a Western Digital media player, digital media player. I've had it for years. Has a 1 terabyte internal hard drive, and I have a 1 terabyte external hard drive hooked to it. You know, just movies and all the TV shows and things I like.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's been running great, no problems. So about 6 weeks ago, all of a sudden, the external hard drive disappeared. It was like, So I started messing, playing, doing some research. Finally thought, well, let me try running check disk. So I pulled it off, hooked it up to one of my other computers, ran check disk /F for the function. Went in, did its thing, plugged it back in, and it showed back up. Well, it keeps disappearing after a certain period of time, and I have to keep running check disk. So I thought, well, maybe I'll run check disk /R to do a repair. And I saw it was going to take like, oh, God, maybe 3 or 4.
Yeah, and I'll be honest with you. If you've spent time with check disk, you know this. It doesn't do much good at all. Check disk is a very limited program. I will refer you, though, to my friend Steve Gibson. He wrote a program many, many moons ago called SpinWrite. In fact, he still sells it. It's still out there. And he tells the story that Microsoft came to him, tried to buy it from him. And he wouldn't sell it because, you know, it's my program. I'm going to keep selling it myself. That's when they came up with check disk, which was the closest thing they could come up with that was close to SpinWrite. But it is no SpinWrite. But they do a similar thing. It's just the check disc isn't as aggressive or as effective as SpinRite. If you really want to save that drive, it's obviously, you know, it's dying, Michael, right? And the hard drives, they don't last forever. They're moving parts. Right. That drive's got to be, what, a terabyte hard drive? It's probably 7 or 8 years old by now.
Yeah, that one, I think, is about 5 years.
Okay, but that's normal. They die. Yeah. I honestly don't usually try to save drives unless, like our caller yesterday, there's something on there I really want. But I did tell him about SpinRite. I'll tell you about SpinRite. Reason I don't usually try to save drives, unless there's something on there, the SpinRite's going to cost you $90. You could get a new 5-terabyte drive for $110. So I don't know if it's worth trying to save that drive. But SpinRite will do what CheckDisk is trying to do, just not as well. Which is, as I mentioned, and since you're a geek, I'm sorry, a techie, I'll give you the techie explanation. It uses a BIOS interrupt that is the interrupt that all, by the way, all PCs use to write and read from the disk. But it calls it directly, unlike Windows, unlike DOS, unlike CheckDisk, it calls it directly and says, don't give up. And what it'll do is it'll go through that whole terabyte drive, read any sectors it can read. If it's hard to read them, it'll get the data off, move it, and mark it unusable. As you know, there's a bad sector table on all hard drives, even brand new hard drives, because no drive is perfect. And that bad sector table has room to grow. And if you use it, as SpinRite will, and mark those off, those sectors will never be used again. You'll have a somewhat smaller hard drive, probably not noticeably smaller, won't be as much as a percent smaller, but every sector will be good. You'll have gone through that drive, verified which sectors are good, and only use those. It is a way to recover that drive. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Just most of the time, cheaper just to buy a new one. In my humble opinion, no, it's not for physical failures. It's really just... it really is a specific thing. It's for hard drives with bad sectors, sectors that are marginal or can't be read. Now, usually if a sector can't be read by the hard drive itself will put it on the bad sector list. So SpinRite specializes in sectors that aren't dead yet, but are dying, right? And I don't think if it's keeping asking for check disk, that means sectors are starting to die. Honestly, I would just buy a new hard drive again. But if you really, you know, you say, well, let's just as an experiment, see if we can restore this. If you go through it and SpinRite goes through it and says, look, these are weak sectors, these are bad sectors, these are failing sectors, gets what data it can, moves it, and then marks those sectors bad, you might find that there's just a chunk of that drive that was starting to fail, but the rest of it's fine, and it continues to operate for another 5 years. Yeah, I'm not crazy about the WTTV either, but that's another matter. Yeah. Yeah, you know, thing is, it's $90 and you'll have it for the rest of your life. It's a useful tool for some people. But this is exactly why I just generally tell people, as soon as a drive starts acting flaky, dump it. No reason to save it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, thank you for letting me be a geek. Your geek on the radio. Dave on the line from Rancho Palos Verdes, California. Hey, Dave.
Hey,
hey!
Taking you off speaker here.
No problem.
Leo, before I get into my mess, quick question. You did the promo for LastPass.
Yes.
And I'd like to switch to it. I'm using a program called Splash ID Safe, and it doesn't list on the website that that's something that just transfers right over instead of reinventing, you know.
Oh, yeah. And if you're moving from one password manager to another, you certainly want to automate it as much as you can. I should mention LastPass is a sponsor, not of the radio show so much, but of all of our podcasts. Let me look at Splash ID. Do they have any export at all?
Yeah, you can make a spreadsheet of it. There's a data.
If you can export, if you can export as a CSV, comma separated value,
mm-hmm.
which you probably can, that's kind of the default. Then you can import it into LastPass.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Remember that export contains all your passwords unencrypted. So make sure you handle that with care. That thing is nuclear.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, I think you'll like LastPass a lot. It's a really good, any password manager is better than no password manager. So I'm not bashing Splash ID. I'd never heard of it before. So I have no idea. It looks like, I'm just looking at the website, looks like a good product. So it's good to use a password manager simply because you can't remember good passwords. And so that, it gives you the tendency to do one of two very, very bad things. Either reuse a password over and over, or make your passwords easy to remember. You know, your dog's name, your birthday, your child's middle name, that kind of thing. The problem is easy to remember is easy to crack. So that's a bad idea. And most of the time people do both. They have one password, easy to remember, and they use it over and over again. That's a nightmare. It's a security nightmare. So a good password manager will help you generate really unmemorable, long, completely random passwords. It'll keep track of them so you don't have to. And a good one will autofill. It'll work on all the devices. That's important. So it should work on Android, iOS, Windows, Mac, and Linux. Any of the ones that you use, any of those that you use, it should work on those, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. Is there any reason you don't like Splash ID, that you're not down with it?
Their support.
That would be a good reason.
They don't have a phone line that you can call.
Interesting.
To get information. Yeah. So, can I get to my big?
Yeah. Of course. Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going insane with Apple Music. about a month ago, I tried to just put an MP3 in it. And it said that I couldn't do that. So I went into Apple forums, and it says that what you should do is turn off syncing, log out, then go back, quit the program, go back and put it in. Well, after that, I've had exponential duplications of my playlist.
Oh, no.
All out of the subfolders. And every single thing, I've been on with the Apple support for hours at a time.
Yeah.
And the last thing I did was try and restore it from a backup I had at the end of March. And at that time, it was iTunes. It wasn't Apple Music.
So right.
I didn't know how to handle that. But I'm up to 16 duplicates of playlists. It's the wrong playlist. It's missing music. They're playlists I never generated, and they're all out of their folders. It's a nightmare.
Now, the good news is, I hope, that it's just the playlist. It's not duplicating the songs. The media is still okay.
Yeah, for the most part.
Yeah.
It's just they're not where they're supposed to be.
Right.
So.
Oh, it's moving songs around? No.
It's taking them out of the playlist.
The playlist is a reference to the song. The song shouldn't move at all. It should all be in the same place. The playlist is just, it's like a playlist. It's a list that you would make.
Right.
And you're syncing it with a device, an iPhone or a tablet or other Macs?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, no. I mean, I access it all the time through my Galaxy, my Samsung.
Ah, okay. So this is historically difficult. Syncing is hard because if it's modified in multiple places, well, which one is official? And so, for instance, if you're syncing with a Samsung and the Samsung does something to a playlist, well, which one now is the official one? So what probably is happening is Apple's saying, well, I don't know, so I'm going to have two of them. And they'll be different slightly, but now I've duplicated. And every time that happens, it's going to duplicate some more, and you're going to get exactly what you have right now, which is a bunch of extra playlists, and they're all a little bit different from one another. There's songs missing. It's annoying, I know, because you put a lot of effort into those playlists. But the syncing is what's causing the problem. That's why, you know, some of the solutions say, well, turn off sync. And it's probably syncing to a non-Apple device. I'm not going to blame Samsung at all. But Apple probably is going, I don't know what I'm getting from this Samsung device. I don't know what I'm seeing. It's confused, and it's doing the wrong thing. So the real problem is this is a fragile system, the playlist system. The good news is it's not modifying, it's not making duplicate songs, it's not moving your songs around. All of that stuff should be exactly where you left them. And it's just that the playlists, which are references to those songs, those are all messed up. And I don't know what the best solution is for that. There are other ways to make playlists. But you want to do it in Apple Music, right? That's what you listen to your music in?
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, you want the playlist to be in whatever you're listening with. So I could say, well, go out and get Vox, which is another Mac-based music system that I really prefer over iTunes. But and then you're going to make your playlist of Vox. And frankly, the playlists in Apple Music are better. They're more capable. So, you can back them up. The thing to know about these playlists is they are XML files. They are text files. And you can back them up. Or you can – remember we were exporting your passwords to CSV? You can actually export your playlists to XML as a text file.
Yes, I know that. Mm-hmm.
What I would do is get your playlist just right, then save them, export them, and put them somewhere because they're going to get screwed up again. Every time you sync, they're going to start to – it just kind of getting nibbled away, right? And periodically what you'll want to do is blow them all out and restore from your XML files. In other words, make something that Apple Music and Samsung can't touch – as your definitive playlists, then the syncing is not going to screw them up. Syncing is notorious. I'm sure you've had problems when you sync address books and you get multiple contacts, or you sync calendars and you get multiple appointments. It's just the way syncing is. It's a hard thing to do. And it's really hard when you're doing it out in a homogeneous ecosystem. If you've got other companies involved, because they don't speak the same language, you know, they're all doing different things. And Apple's looking at the Samsung playlist saying, what is this? I don't understand this. And Samsung's looking at the Apple playlist saying, well, I can fix that. But it's like telephone. By the time you get it back, it's not the playlist you thought it was. It's the best I can offer. I don't think there's any way to fix it. I think the best thing to do, and this is, by the way, the same advice I give somebody who's address book has been messed up by bad syncing. Create a canonical perfect playlist or perfect address book and then copy it and put it aside because it's going to get messed up again. And when it does, you go, yeah, thanks, Samsung, and you put it back. I honestly don't think there's any other way to do this. This is something we all have to deal with, I'm sorry to say. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a safe, great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security and Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.